Welcome to Out of the Ordinary, the show that helps you grow a daily life that matters. I'm Christy Purifoy.
And I'm Lisa Jo Baker. And whew, Christy, today's conversation felt a bit like live therapy. It was vulnerable and enlightening, and I guess I'm glad it's you, like an old friend I can trust to ask these kinds of hard questions.
Lisa Jo, I think what I love most about the story you share today is that now, thanks to you, I know it is possible to keep breathing even when it feels like we are underwater. So get comfy, friends.
Here we go.
Lisa Jo, I took a very lovely trip down memory lane this morning because I had some visitors, some lovely ladies here at Maplehurst, the Black Barn, Beth and Julie and Jana, who were talking about hosting an event here. So we were in the barn discussing, layouts and seating. And I got to tell them all about that wonderful live podcast party we did. Gosh, how many years ago?
Wow. Yeah, because it was 2019, wasn't
yes.
it? It was the summer of 2019. So, I mean, the world has literally changed since then.
It's true. I feel like we've lived a lot of life since then. But gosh, it was so good to remember that magical night. And I'm sure there are some folks listening who were there with us that night. And wasn't it just a precious, precious time? Anyhow, so as we stood in the barn, one of these sweet ladies told me that she is a fan of the podcast, a longtime listener, and then she made a special note to mention, and I just really appreciated this, she especially wanted you to know how much she loved your book, Middle Matters.
Oh my goodness, so kind.
Yes, and I don't know if it's because we've talked a bit on the podcast about, how that book didn't find the readership that you hoped it had. But she just really wanted you to know that she didn't know what was wrong with those other people because she loved it. but Lisa Jo, I felt inspired to tell her, almost like I was reassuring her. I don't know why I felt I needed to do that. She didn't need my reassurance, but I wanted her to know that if Middle Matters, I felt like, so I'm curious to actually hear your thoughts on this. I felt like if Middle Matters had, just been more successful than your wildest dreams, if it had reached lots and lots of people, that I just didn't know if that would have led to you writing the book that is coming out that we are all waiting for here in just like 2 weeks. Oh my goodness, a couple weeks. I didn't think that the success of Middle Matters would have led to this book. And so I wanted her to know that I felt like whatever it took, I am so glad that you you did the work to bring us this book that's coming out. So I'm curious to know, like, how would you describe, like, is there that relationship between Middle Matters, which was now like 5 years ago, and your new book? How would you describe it?
As usual, that's so insightful. The person who wrote The Middle Matters did not have the capacity to write It Wasn't Roaring, It Was Weeping. Mm. That person in 2019, I think much like a lot of us, all of us, if you think back, listener, to who you were in 2019, 5 years ago, and just what you know now or what you've suffered since then or what your family has gone through or how your eyes have been opened, yeah, I genuinely don't think I had the tools yet than to write this book. But you are correct. If Middle Matters had done hugely well, just commercially, at the time I had signed a 2-book deal, so I still owed a book after The Middle Matters. And I think it would have been quite easy then to almost just draft on the coattails of that book, which in many ways is, I mean, I love it. It's great writing, but it's very much writing at the surface, right? It touches on things, but it's like if you go to the dentist and they tap on the top of your tooth and you're like, it might not be great, but it seems fine. But it doesn't like go down to the root canal to like address the pain that if you tapped hard on the tooth, you would feel. So Middle Matters, if people had loved that, I'd think, oh, I should write more of this. Like I should write more of these essays that are reflective, but they weren't costly. I think that's the best way to describe it. They didn't cost me anything. not in terms of my art. They didn't stretch me. They didn't cost me in terms of my relationships with my family. They didn't cost me in terms of how much I was willing to trust God to show or teach me anything. And so the catalyst really for Middle Matters being a door to this next book is it forced me to really ask, like, who am I and what am I writing about? And do I have anything to say? And those are complicated questions. Mm-hmm. And I think if I hadn't been under contract to write the next book, I probably wouldn't have. Mm-hmm. I genuinely think I might have just been like, I think I'm done writing books. But like, I had to write another one. Middle Matters hadn't really landed, even though I felt like the writing was good. So I was forced into this position of like, okay, I have to write this next book while simultaneously experiencing like sort of the crushing pressures the earth puts on coal to create diamonds. It's the only way I can describe it, which I actually think probably describes a lot of people's last 5 years is my guess.
Yeah, I think so. I'm something weird happened. Like we all lived through some sort of suffering time warp so that it doesn't even, it feels much more like a before and after than a just, 5 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm excited to just see what we pull out of this conversation, and maybe the terms I'm bringing to it won't end up being, you know, where we land, but just from the beginning here, I mean, I actually want to introduce this word, but I'm going to give it like a million caveats because, you know, when you hear it, you'll know why. But I'm going to introduce this word, which is failure. Mm. And I'm using that word not because I think Middle Matters was a failure, actually quite the opposite. But there were some aspects of that release or that birth of that book that I think casual observers of the world might classify as, oh, failure. You know, you write a book to sell lots of copies and you didn't, so it didn't succeed. Failure. And I guess I just want to throw that word out there so that we can kind of go to those harder places, because something that really fascinates me about your story is that something that looks like failure or that looks like a dead end or that looks like the end or looks like a dismantling. As you say, like it could have been the ending or the dismantling of your life as a writer. Like that could have been it so easily. And yet what it looks like now, as we look back, is actually a beginning. So not an ending, a beginning. And a necessary preparation and a something that led to this incredible process of not only suffering, but healing and writing that you've been on. But I guess maybe just to help our listeners, I mean, I'm aware of how your life has been these past few years. Some of that you have shared as you've lived it on the podcast, but not necessarily. So I want to like first maybe lay out a timeline, because when I talk about your suffering and your healing, I am on the one hand talking about suffering that you write about in this book. But then there was also, you've suffered a lot and your family has suffered a lot during the writing of the book. So it's like this timeline of suffering, but it's also the before. So things that you had already suffered when you wrote Middle Matters. And then the suffering that came after that I think is what you're describing as this crucible that turns something into a diamond. So do you want to say more about what the suffering was, just so our listeners have this like timeline? Like what happened, Lisa Jo? What is this that we're...
I suddenly feel so vulnerable. I'm like suddenly aware that we're having this conversation publicly. And I'm like, oh my gosh, but it's such good questions and it's making me think differently too. So let me begin by saying this. When I wrote Middle Matters, I remember saying to my agent, I just want to write a book that's full of joy, that's full of this delight of my life right now, how I found parenting little children really challenging, like really difficult. And I just loved as they were getting older. And I felt like I had grown into a comfort with my body and the work I was doing and my friendships. And I just felt this sense of wholeness. Like I had arrived at a place that felt like the middle, and it felt like it wasn't without hard things, but it felt sweet in a way that maybe I just hadn't expected. I was taken by surprise. And I said, I just want to write for the joy of writing. I want to write these essays that celebrate these good things that are beautiful, that have moments of hard, but that I just see God in these ordinary things. I want to write these love letters to ordinary life. And my agent said, go for it. Like, that'd be awesome. And my publisher said that. And now in retrospect, I believe that God was like, yes, okay, go write that. Like, enjoy it. Mm. Savor that. Find a place in your life where you feel strong and safe. Because I can't even say it. Because I'm about to just completely blow up your entire life.
Holy
and it would be good to do it from a place of wholeness. Like, I just felt like, I'm all God's like, oh, that's so lovely. Yes. Like, it felt like taking a big, deep breath right before the wave crashes down in your face. Like, you're floating with your back toward the ocean and you're looking at the beach and the sky and the sun. There's your family and it's like this perfect day. And you're like, oh, it's so lovely. And you take a deep breath and you don't even know the wave is coming. It just like crushes you under the water and your head hits the coral reef. And every time you come up for air in the next 5 years, there's another wave waiting for you. Like, that was like the posture. And so when I think about us gathering at your house for that incredible afternoon of meeting listeners and live podcast and sharing my book and your book and the chalk mural on the side of the barn that Amy Hinneman did, we'll never forget it. And us posing under the sign that she had done, the illustration, the middle matters, you know, and it was like the Lord was like, it does. And savor this moment, like catch your breath.
Yeah.
Are you ready? Is how it felt to me. Because along with the rest of you, you know, we all got hit by COVID, but we then just had this very strange timeline of events. So at the time COVID began, Peter and I were in a very challenging season in our own marriage. Very, very challenging. We'd been married 20 years. And it was almost as if we're both firstborn kids and we are almost groomed to politely get along with everybody, to be hosts, to be gracious. And so in order to do that and be parents, we had just kind of carpeted over a lot of things, not just between one another, but in our lives, like with our families and our parents, and just politely gone on. And so we at that time had started some therapy that caused like a horrifying disruption in our story as we paused to like examine all of these monsters that came up out of the basement that we didn't know were there. And at the same time, COVID hit and that impacted Peter's job, which he ended up losing. I remember at the time he kept trying to get jobs. Like, he applied to like a Heinz gas station where they sell chicken, and like he got turned down by the gas station chicken people.
That was a real low moment. I remember that.
It was bad. It was the same weekend that a mouse like ate through our AC cord.
The mouse.
And like our air conditioning went out when it was like 82 degrees in the summer. And then that began a series over a year of like this sweet man who said he could help us, the neighborhood guy. And it just like every time, like every 2 weeks, it would just stop running for a couple of weeks and he could never get to us. And so we're living in like a hellfire of humidity in our house and internally in our marriage. Mm-hmm. And Peter didn't have a job. And so then I was hustling to try to come up with ideas for work. Our kids took a real downturn during that period.
as was true for many of us.
For everybody. Yeah. Went through some pretty severe mental health crises. It was pretty bad. And then I got a phone call from South Africa. I'll never forget my brother one afternoon as I was heading out to drop Zoe somewhere. He's like, hey, have you got time to talk? And I was like, I'm literally getting in the car to drive Zoe. Is this urgent? And he's like, well, I can do it quickly. So I have ball cancer is how he started it. And I was like, what's happening? Turned out he had testicular cancer that had migrated to his lungs. And so he had nodules all over his lungs. At the time, his wife was pregnant with their fourth baby. And I had to leave to go and speak at a huge event. And when I got back from the huge event, I literally landed at like 4 a.m. or whatever, walked into the house at 7, and my dad called and was like, hey, I need to tell you something. And I was like, I'm so tired. I just got off a plane. Can we talk tomorrow? And he's like, no. And I think it'd be good if Pete's with you. I was like, wait, what? And he's like, exactly a week later, my other brother was diagnosed with the exact same cancer. And I remember sitting there in the lounge in such shock and my father going, Lisa Jo, are you there? And Peter going, I don't think she can talk right now. She's just We don't know what to say. We're just processing. So that led to 2 years of pretty torturous treatments for both of my brothers. And you know, Joshua's lasted a lot longer. He had two incredibly terrible surgeries on both lungs and stem cell transplants and nearly died multiple times. It was, and then his wife gave birth in the midst of all of it. I flew home to South Africa to be with them. And Pete's parents came up to be with my family while I was in South Africa for weeks and weeks. And while with us, Pete's father was diagnosed with like end-stage pancreatic cancer. It was a lot. And my sister-in-law at the time then had multiple miscarriages. And when they finally got pregnant and were able to have a baby, she nearly died during that childbirth. And then my father had a cardiac event and had to like go into hospital for that. So it was just, it was so much. And then we were like, all that was happening. So everyone listening has their own context for that, right? Mm-hmm. Like you all had terrible things happening while the world around you was experiencing mm-hmm. terrible things. So all of this, these external and internal forces were all operating on me mm-hmm. at a time when, travel back with me, right at the beginning, like on the cusp of all of this, I stood with Christy in her kitchen and we started talking about this next book that I owed on my contract. And I was like, either I can write like sort of an easy Christian living book, sort of what Middle Matters was doing, or I can start to try to look at what's under the rug. Mm-hmm. Because in talking to my therapist, in talking to my husband, in looking back over 20 years, I realized I made eye contact with a history that I had never dealt with. Mm-hmm. And Christy said to me, I know where I was standing. I was like standing literally on by your island right in front of the trash can. And mm-hmm. you were on the other side of the island. And you said to me, Lisa Jo, I think the way God works is he'll only push us as far as we're willing to let him take us. And so you can write a book that's sort of a lovely book like Middle Matters. Or if you are willing to let him go deep inside of you to all of those places that hurt and are broken, he will heal you as deep as you let him go. Are you willing to go there and write that book? And I remember you saying, I mean, I don't think I would want to. The question is, do you want to do that?
Right.
And so I actually have looked recently at some videos I did right around Middle Matters time mm-hmm. for a bunch of speaking events. It's kind of like a little trailer video that I had recorded for churches. And like that girl is so precious. Like she's like 30 pounds lighter. Oh. She has no wrinkles. Like she just looks like happy and like obliviously delightful. And I guess the word I would use is unscarred. Like there's something about her that is that girl from The Middle Matters who weirdly, like everything I write in this next book, she had lived it. But she hadn't looked yet. Like mm-hmm. God had let her be in that place of facing the beach and taking a deep breath mm-hmm. and the wave hadn't hit yet. Mm-hmm. And the person who wrote this next book, mm-hmm. she's the one who tried to figure out how to breathe underwater mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. is the best way I would describe it.
You know what? I thought of this as you were saying that. So she was unscarred. But I'm realizing that what that means is she was unhealed. Like the wounds were all hidden.
Yeah.
There were no scars. And when we show up with scars, often what we're showing, just like, you know, we're in the Easter season now. So all the gospel texts at church are, you know, Jesus showing his scars, not his wounds, but his healed, resurrected scars to his disciples and saying, touch, feel this. Like, it's me. I'm real and I'm healed and I'm alive. Hello.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, Lisa Jo, like, yes, you've got scars now. And I think they're so beautiful. Like, they speak of healing. They speak of a kind of resurrected life. I think resurrection is something that we anticipate, that we look forward to, but also that we experience, you know, we live in the power of it now. And I do think of you as a resurrected person, like, you know, the things that were so buried down and bleeding, you know, like an internal wound. Like you partnered with Christ to shine the light. And now there's been healing. And so, scars, but those are signs of healing, which is just amazing. I had even forgotten some of what you went through. As you went through the litany there, I realized, oh gosh, I forgot about that and that. Oh,
it was
Lisa
so
Jo.
Bad. It was so bad. The chicken gas station was a very low moment. Oh, and at the same time, our septic tank like stopped working. So
right.
There's like all of that happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I look at the girl who wrote Middle Matters. She had lived through everything that's in this next book.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
She just, that's what's so interesting about our minds, isn't it? Like she mm-hmm. had lived through all of it, but she hadn't been ready to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And God is... The way God works, so my father is a doctor. He has a surgeon's hands. He's been in surgery most of his life. And we know that you have to go in and like do damage. Like mm-hmm. you have to cut away. Mm-hmm. Like you have to, it has to become healed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about, there's a story in this book. I talk about how my dad and I were on a road trip together in the States, and I was in college and it was hot. It was summer. I was wearing shorts and flip-flops, and I looked down at my leg, and on my left leg, there is a scar. It's about the size of like two quarters, and it's this very thin, shiny, paper-thin skin right on my shin bone. And it's there because when I was a kid, when I was 12 or 13, I was playing tag. I slipped and I fell and I cut my leg, and my dad stitched it up. But he did a bad job. In order for it to heal well, you must cut away all of the dead skin. If you stitch together skin that's dead, it doesn't heal properly. And so instead what happened is that he put the stitches in, and then the skin, kind of imagine hands folded in prayer. The fingers started to slip apart. Mm. And so the stitches pulled apart and the skin stretched apart. And now I have the scar always, forever, on my leg because my dad, and he knows it, he talks about it, he didn't cut away enough dead skin.
Mm.
And so that has become a metaphor in so many ways. And I lived with the scar on my leg forever without ever really thinking about where we come from, without being in a season or a place or a time when I had capacity to pay attention to these questions of healing. And mm-hmm. in order to heal properly, we have to cut out the dead stuff. We have to. But to do that, we have to be willing to see it. And I don't know, to quote a movie, when I think about The Sixth Sense, you know, where he's like, I see dead people. Like you, not everybody can see them. Like I feel like you have to be at a stage in your life where you're willing to look at the dead things, and you're willing then to say, whoa, this didn't heal properly. How do mm-hmm. I get rid of this dead skin? Not to cause you more pain. Like mm-hmm. that isn't what Christ is doing, but because he wants you to heal. And so that person who wrote Middle Matters, she wasn't lying to herself. Mm-hmm. She just didn't see yet. And mm-hmm. so I think about this book now as the story that lives under the story mm-hmm. of all of the other books I wrote, mm-hmm. but that I just wasn't equipped yet to even make eye contact with.
Mm, the deeper story. And yeah, that's powerful. So I've been reading this new book by Marilynne Robinson. It's her reflections on Genesis. So I'm sure some of our listeners are also Marilynne Robinson fans, her wonderful Gilead novels. But this is, nonfiction. Anyway, so I'm just kind of immersed in Genesis right now with Marilynne Robinson. And, you know, the thing that keeps happening in Genesis, especially at the beginning, is, you know, you have this sort of these chaos waters, this disorder, and then you have creation, you know, the spirit that hovers. And then breathes life and order into the world, but then you kind of have these cycles of increasing disorder and chaos. So that then you get the Noah story, which is a story of destruction, but it's the story of a destruction that leads to a recreation, a renewal, and the kind of new creation that wouldn't be possible without some element of destruction. And I think maybe we don't talk about these things enough because you have to be careful talking about these things because it's so nuanced, so complicated. You can't jump ahead and say, well, destruction is good, or God causes terrible things to happen in our lives for these purposes. Like you have to be so careful because I think we can do a lot of damage to other people and to ourselves and our understanding of who God is if we don't treat these stories with care. So acknowledging that, I do think it is still worthwhile to just sit with them and and then sit with our lives. And whether it's looking for meaning in our suffering, again, we have to be so careful. I don't believe that God causes these bad things. I would never say like, oh, praise God, he gave your brothers cancer. So, like, no.
Right.
Not at all. But what I think is so incredible about our God is that when disorder and chaos rears its head, when powers of evil like try to do something, try to snatch someone or hurt someone, God's like, whoa, I'm going to turn it into good. Like again and again, he takes this disordered, chaotic nightmare and he pulls out goodness and weaves good stories and brings healing and brings renewal. So it's so nuanced, right? So I just like keep wanting to say that, you know, it's just not something that we can talk about casually or carelessly. And yet it's real. And so like when I think about what you have suffered these past years, there's so much mystery in it that I just can't even begin to approach. And yet there is this beauty of life and healing, you know, whether it's the new babies in your family or your own healing that has somehow has come together with this, the intense suffering that is just incredible. So, you know, I guess to extend the Genesis metaphor is that, you know, for those of us who, like, it doesn't always look this intense either. I think it happens in all these small ways in our lives that if we're longing for something new or we're in transition or, you know, I think I have been for a while in a place of sort of beginning to say, oh, okay, what's next? I sense that things are changing. I sense that some old ways of living, like as, you know, understandably, like I'm middle-aged, my kids are leaving home. Next year will be my first year when exactly two kids will be off at college and two kids will still be home. Like it is in every way feels like this seesaw, middle of the seesaw, like this point, right, of shift where pretty soon like things are going to tip over and everything will be so different. And so that's where I am. And I just feel like one really great question to ask, or one question I feel prompted to ask is like, well, what needs to fail? What needs to get destroyed? What needs to be broken down? What needs to be done away with, cleaned up, swept up, looked at, like whatever it is, in order to serve as the beginning for the new thing. And I just think, and I do this too, that we just imagine beginnings begin with beginnings, but every beginning is also some kind of ending. Like it takes the ending before we get the new beginning. And just to be aware of that, so that, you know, because we might need to participate in the ending. So what I love about you, your book, this book and your story is that you were a full participant in what God was tearing down in order to build up new. Like he couldn't have done it without your help and your yes and your participation. But I just think that that's probably true in my life too. Like, what am I meant to be, you know, participating in a kind of clearing ground or saying goodbye or ending or finishing so that, you know, the next thing can begin? Like that too might require my participation. So I think we're talking about lots of things, Lisa Jo. I think we're talking about suffering. We're talking about healing. We're talking about that deep inner work and letting God, like the light and life of God, go to those deep places. But we're also just talking about the journey of life and discerning seasons and learning to let go of things so that we can receive new things. And I don't know. I just think what you've lived through is just true on all these levels. And I guess I hope that the end of the story for all of us is exactly like the Genesis to Revelation story, which is paradise to paradise, good garden to even better garden, right?
Yes. And I really can testify to the fact that I think whatever hard thing, listener, you're in the middle of, there's a temptation to just want out.
Yeah.
Like, to just get out of it. Like, I want out of this pain. And I think of that viscerally. Like, if you're getting a shot at the doctor or they're putting in stitches, like, you want out. but God is inviting us to come through, like to go through with him. Like,
yes.
I think it's interesting he describes it like the valley of the shadow of death, but valleys lead somewhere, right? Like they're going through. It's not about out. He never says like, climb up out of the valley. Like you go through it.
Yeah.
And so I think what's really powerful about this year I turned 50. Pete and I will be married 25 years. Our firstborn graduates high school and goes to college. And in many ways, it's felt like the end of at least that set of waves. I'm sure there will be more, but it's been 5 years that were some of the most brutal, honestly, that we've lived through. But this year, I can just say like just a deep sense of the peace of the Lord again. Like the water feels calm here for a little bit. There's a sense of celebration, like of, moving from the garden to the garden, this sense of fruitfulness, like this opportunity to reap the fruit, to like savor and enjoy. Like conversations like this are evidence of the work God did. And it feels like good fruit, a banquet, like to get to talk to you, Christy. To every one of you who will read this book, I cannot tell you how much I welcome you to reach out to me on Instagram and tell me what resonated with you. Because for me, this is what God did. Like we moved from me standing in your kitchen and saying yes to what I really didn't even know at the time was coming and to being on this side of it now. And here the book is in front of me on the desk. And it's not just a book about a history, about pain, about suffering, about redemption, but it's a book about the journey of writing it, you know, and what happened during it. And I'm changed. Like my body hurts. Like I'm tired. Like I feel all kinds of weird ways in which I wear this book on me. But I also am certain that God has brought me into a wholer understanding of who he is and who I am, who I actually am, like what my story really is and how he has always seen it. Clearly, like he sees you, like whatever it is that you don't want to look at, he already sees it and knows it and is willing to take you through it. Like he won't ever leave you alone. So if you're listening now and it's killing you that you have to wait for it to come out because it's killing me, like I want you to have it right now. Like we'll put a link in the show notes where you can get the first three chapters right away and the first chapter of the audiobook. So if you've pre-ordered, it doesn't matter where you've ordered it, there's a form you can fill out and it will send you so you can start reading or listening right away. Because part of the goodness of this is this, like the podcast, the sense in which a book is you and me, listener, together. Like I want to hear from you. So I would love if you reach out to me. I'm on Instagram at Lisa Jo Baker. And you can always reach out to Christy too. She's there as well.
I just realized, hello, I pre-ordered your book and why have I not downloaded the first audio? So I'm just going to put in a little plug here at the end for audiobooks. It took me years to get into them. I always shared them with my kids. Like my kids were always listening to books. I would listen to books with my kids. They would listen at bedtime, but I never listened to my books audio ever. And I don't know what, I know, I remember what switched. COVID, again, we're talking about 2020. It was 2020 because my kids were always home. I was losing my mind as an introvert. Like I needed to be alone so badly, but I could not be alone. Yeah. But what I realized is that I could go out and work in the garden and I could put on headphones and I could lose myself in a book while gardening or doing chores or whatever. And it felt as if I was alone. So anyway, that's when I got super into audiobooks. And so now I always have one going to listen to like when I'm out in the garden or doing laundry. So I'm just realizing, Lisa Jo, why have I not started with your free audio chapter? And as soon as it comes out, I mean, I know I'll get a book from you, like a hardback, but I think I might. I mean, so I'll probably
you should.
But I think I might just get listen to the whole thing. It would be so fun to hear
I would
you
love
read
that.
The book to me. And with the languages.
Many languages. Yes.
That will make it so much better. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. So listeners, yes, you definitely need a copy because it's gorgeous. It's hefty. It's going to look amazing on your bookshelf. It's so good. Yes, I love it. But I think, podcast listeners we already know are into, having something to listen to while we're out and about. So let's just commit right now. We're all going to download that audio as soon as we can and have Lisa Jo walk us through this story. I can't wait. Oh my goodness.
Oh, Christy, this is good therapy leading up to launch. I feel like these conversations, you're helping me be prepared.
We are going to
thank
have
you
fun.
Listeners. We are.